several years since most of those people had built the farm in question. So they would write us a letter and say, you know, brothers, if you ever want any more of these parts, you better order them now because we're changing our production line over to make something else.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them just went out of that business completely.
Mm-hmm.
They were, maybe they were in the business of making some hydraulic actuator, and they would shut that land down, maybe even shut that plant down, and go somewhere else and build some other part.
And then make a decision that's going to change our money
or make provisions that we could get the part built somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
which usually caused us to have to get the part requalified. And that meant we had to go through another test program to make sure that it met the requirements for manned space flight.
Mm-hmm.
That could get expensive.
Then, Houston had a similar logistics program that you had there?
Yes, they didn't have a logistics office as such. They had usually had one or two men who worried about this type of thing located in the program office.
They mentioned Smolensky headquarters, who started the thing. I wondered if they established a logistics office at all three centers at all the same time.
The first logistics management office was established here at Marshall. Houston never did establish a logistics office. And Kennedy always considered themselves as pretty much of a logistics-oriented center anyway. And so that's our business to begin with, so we need a logistics office, and in a sense they were right. And NASA headquarters did establish an Apollo logistics office in the remaining Forest Wall that they got from the Air Force. And we had 8 or 10 people working with him at the height of the program.
Did you have much to do with people following the right goal? I'm thinking about all these parts coming in, and you had a decision maybe to even ask a manufacturer to keep on making them. And did quality and reliability ever call you up and say, hey, these things are no good anymore?
Yes, we got to get that sort of thing. My office did not direct what quality lab did or ask them specifically to work with us. They worked with us just like they worked with the program office.
Mm-hmm.
And they would let us know if they felt that there was a problem or something.
Can you tell us a little bit about the program? Things that you remember, particular meetings?
Oh, I guess I'd tell you about the same thing that everybody else has about him. I thought he ran the most unusual meetings I've ever seen. When the first few times I was exposed to him, I wondered how he ever got anything done. Because I can recall very few times when Dr. Von Braun ever really made a decision as a result of a meeting. He operated more by getting his people to discuss something and finally kind of come to an agreement themselves. It was more committee action.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen him a few times when he was quite decisive in what he wanted to do. But he, I think, was much more of a leader than he was a manager. He relied on other people to be the manager. For example, Arthur Rudolph in the Saturn V program and Lee James in the Saturn more than one people. They ran those programs and he backed them. He had a very inquiring mind. He wanted to know about everything. He was one of the easiest people to know to work with. I've ever seen him. But as I say, I don't recall that he ever made many just plain outright decisions. I mean, well, I'm sure he did when the time came. He just, if there was some center policy that he said, we will do this, okay, let's go, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily a politician and a leader in the sense that he got, that people enjoyed working for him and went out of their way to do it. And it was quite a job because he had, I don't think I've ever been around any group of people that have as many diverse interests as this group has. Every one of these lab directors is a personality all of his own. I was at that time. I can't say that about Marshall now. Every program manager was a distinct, different personality. Lee James and Arthur Rudolph could not have been very different. Lee James was the typical Army colonel who listened until he had enough information to make a decision. He made a decision, got enough of it, and expected it to be carried out. And Rudolph, on the other hand, would worry a problem until midnight or later, and maybe he started in the next morning and worry about it. It was just, and yet they were both effective, and one brown, I think, would hardly have favored one over the other. And you need to get people to do things. I think Von Brown could have been a tremendous success in anything he did, including coaching a football team.
I believe he would have had a great coach.
Because I would go into his office with a meeting and I'd come out of there so charged up, I just had to go solve the problem right now.
Did he give this because he was still so enthusiastic in the meeting? Just to force him?
Well, you know, there was tremendous personality, and he is the best listener I've ever known. When you talked, he gave you his undivided attention. You knew that he was listening to the whole problem. Mm-hmm. And he could always talk to you in such a way that you felt like you were the authority and you were the man. He personally was depending upon to get something done. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, you did more than was on your job sheet. And you knew also that when you did something, he was going to back you.
You mentioned that they were actually going to personal base. Are there any people in some of the regions and all that?
Yes, I think the strongest man I know, one of the most distinct personalities, was Carl Heinberg.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I had an awful lot to do with his logistics program. And I think I could say very safely that Carl Heinberg was a distinct, very forceful personality. I don't think anybody would argue with me on that, including Carl Heinberg. he was very strong. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew what should be done. And you had better be right if you opposed him.
Mm-hmm.
He respected opposition. He respected the men that would stand up for what he believed to be right, and he would help him. But it had to be an honest conviction, and I don't think he'd tolerate being wrong. Very wrong.
Can you smile if you don't remember a few minutes ago? Would you be willing to take a picture of
that? Sure. Carl Heinberg, his laboratory really had the job of developing the transportation equipment that was used on the Saturn program. Don Stewart, as I said, worked on the Guppy, was a Heinberg test laboratory man.
Mm-hmm.
Julian Hamilton, Will Spivey, Redbird, I'm sure he's got a different first name than that, but they call him Redbird. And we had a fellow, Captain Evans, here at one time. They are test lab people working with Carl Heinberg, and they were the ones who did the engineering associated with the conversion of the barges and the ships, this sort of thing. And Carl, of course, had a tremendous interest in this. When my office was created in October of 1963, one of the first things I did, let me preface this and say that a year before then, for the previous year, I had been working as an assistant director of the Saturn Systems Office with Dr. Longa. And in October 63, Miles came into being when the center was reorganized and Dr. Longa's Saturn Systems Office was abolished. So Heinberg had already been working in this area for some time. So one of the first things I did was to go over, I recognized I'd have a problem with the test laboratory, because I had been given the responsibility for managing the transportation portion of the logistics program. And as such, I would be asking a part-time group of people to do certain things in support of my office. So, I know that Carl was quite jealous of his work that he had done. He liked it, and so he did an excellent job. And so one morning, I went over to Steve Heinberg. I had an appointment with him, and I got in there, and it didn't take just a few minutes for him to let me know that no uncertain times, and he didn't appreciate the fact that I had been getting this job. And I told him that I intended that we worked very closely together, but I did have a responsibility, and I would be asking him for support. So, we may have talked to some other people about Carl, but he's the kind of fellow that a lot of his people are literally scared to death of. He walked over to the side of his room and picked up a mallet that was made out of reinforcing steel. The handle was about a 3/4 inch bar, and the head of it was about 2 inches. And he picked that thing up with both hands and swung it around, and he said, "This is what I use when people go to do." So I had to go over and pick up the mallet, swing it a couple times myself, and tell him that two people could swing up there. And we didn't have any more trouble. But this is the kind of fellow he was. And I can tell you another thing, illustrate his personality beautifully. Jack Dawes, who is presently the head of Mississippi Test Facility, was sent down by Dr. Reese to work as a special assistant to Carl Heinberg. This was in 1962. And one morning, Jack came to work, and he was late getting in about 8:30, and he saw that Carl Heinberg's parking space was empty. So he figured that Carl was out of town, so he just pulled in the parking space. Well, he didn't realize that Carl was late getting to work, too. And when Carl came a few minutes later, he saw that someone was in his parking space, so he got somebody that was little fellow walking down the street to come over, and the two of them shoved Jack's car back out of the way, and we put the other guy in Jack's car. He pushed Jack's car about 3 miles down the road and left it parked in the woods. He came back up with his car in the parking space. It took Jack 2 days to get up there enough to ask him for his car. But he never did have that problem with his parking place.
Yes, it's strong bars in the
morning. He ran that laboratory. There's never any question in that thing.
Why do you think the people have changed so much in personality, you know, by COVID?
Well, I think we've all gotten a little older for one thing, but I guess the urgency of the mission is just not here now. We're becoming a little more typical government agency, I would say. Also, we've lost some of them. Yeah, we've lost some of the people that were really the exciting leaders. In my opinion, one of the great mistakes we made was saying that we came from here. He was a very forceful man and very strong, and things happened. He made decisions, he moved, he knew where he was going. I don't think we have the leadership now. If I can talk off of that, I don't think we have the type of leadership we had. And of course, we don't have the urgency of the program. There's not that goal out there that we have to do certain things at a certain time. That business of getting to the moon and back in this decade was sitting right out there like a target all the time. And I don't believe Ron Brown ever had a meeting with me to mention that. In some way. So you're always conscious of the fact that you had to do that job now.
Effort over such a long period does seem quite important.
It is. I think it's amazing that it should be maintained. And it wasn't just one bond. I mean, a lot of people here like to play one bond, which is fine. But wasn't that same leadership in Marshall headquarters and in Houston and at the contractors' plants? I don't know of anybody that was playing this game.
What effect did the Palm Fire have? You know, probably more related to Houston, but did you feel it one way or another to make a difference?
Well, yes, we became considerably more safety conscious. Not that we weren't already, but we did a lot of things. We went back and rechecked an awful lot of hardware. As a suspect that there was some competition between Houston and Marshall. We were pretty much considered the one line team here in Houston. You know, the NACA, it had become an advanced space flight. So I think there was some rivalry there. You know, but I don't think we're in, but there was some rivalry within Marshall between the Americans and the Germans. She pretty well understood that if Walter Mosman, for example, Dr. Mosman, didn't like something was going on with my Dr. Mosman's house that evening, get it straightened out. And Carl Heinberg and the other German people were members of the staff. But I think, really, you kind of expect that.
Mm-hmm.
After all, we were working together a long time. Now we call it, I don't really think they took advantage of that to expensive American.
Was this feeling of rivalry different after the fire? You mentioned it. Was it just kind of a factor that's been...
I don't really know. It didn't. I wasn't in the area where that would have been too much.
Okay.
I really think that they made a little more about a fire than they should have as far as NASA was concerned. But true, it was a very bad accident, and it should not have occurred.
Now, I think it was amazing that we got through all of these things the way we did without any more accidents. You mentioned the accidents and the transportation of the cryogenics area. To me, that's an amazing thing. But we hit a bridge there with a barge load of hydrogen down in Florida, and it tore the barge up pretty badly. Yeah, the one and only time that we took hydrogen to the Kennedy Space Center by barge. I'm glad we didn't have to do it again because we had to go through that Florida canal. That's where it happened.
Was that 63, 67?
Yeah, years ago.
John, what was this, too? She was about when we went around the Indiana loaded here and the other barge down here. What was this? This was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was in your area. Was that something broke or something?
That was in 63, I think. I can't remember whether the lock gate
was used
or something.
That was a big thing at the time, but it was probably no big deal.
Luckily, we had two barges, one downstream and one upstream, so we were able to unload one and take it over, put it in the other, and take it on down.
Right, we didn't know nobody else said it. It was in about 63. Did you ever hear anybody getting shot? I mean, whether it's BB guns or any of these things that were floating around?
I asked one time, I asked one of the pilots if he would overhead anything happen. And he said the only time he said that somebody put a rifle bullet through a pilot's house.
I heard that.
Off the tug. I was pushing the guard. But that's fairly common on Mississippi.
Yeah.
I used to work on the river and he said that happened at Bristol.
Nobody ever got hurt, but they were pretty good shots.
Yeah, they were.
They shots to let you know when they were
shot.
They appreciate you giving them.
That's what I'm saying.
What about how is the shuttle, your logistics, how's that going to enter into going to the shuttle, all the way up to the thing in orbit? Does your logistics program extend to being the Earth orbiter?
No. That would be an in-flight logistics.
So that's an in-flight logistics. And it won't be in your orbit.
No. Well, we hope that our plans are, and I'll be talking to NASA headquarters on this Thursday, we hope that we'll be given the job of doing all the logistics planning and execution for the shuttle in its ground operations, not in its flight operations.
You're at NASA.
Great.
We
have the people here that can do it.
Okay. Yeah, we thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. John,
very good. This is an interview with Dr. Johnson on the subject of the Pegasus meteoroid detection.